Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Male friendship and male bonding are hardly new, but there's a new vocabulary in play these days, mashing up male friendship and old-fashioned romance. Bromance is hot. Man crush, mandate. The new film I Love You, Man brims with a new kind of buddy talk. So is something really changing? This hour On Point, male friendship in the age of bromance. You can join the conversation. Are male friendships changing, loosening up, mattering more? What does bromance mean to you? Joining me now from Baltimore is Jeffrey Greif, author of Buddy System, Understanding Male Friendships. He's a professor at the University of Maryland and blogs on male friendships for Psychology Today. Jeffrey Greif, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tom.
Great to have you. And from Montreal, Canada, Robert Heasley joins us. He is president of the American Men's Studies Association and is in Montreal for the 17th Annual Conference on Men and Masculinities, plural. Interesting. He's an associate professor of sociology at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Robert Heasley, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Great to have you with us. And from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst, senior editor of the Atlantic Monthly, and my good buddy, Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack. Good to have you.
Hey, bro.
Hey, bro. Love you, man.
Jeffrey, Robert.
Hey. We'll get the latest news here from Robert and Jeffrey. But, Jack, first to you, do you sense something new going on in male friendship, male bonding out there? Or is it just in the movies or something more?
Well, if I may, I'd like to begin with an anecdote that Gore Vidal tells. He was one of the writers, the work of screenwriters for Ben-Hur, which, of course, starred Charlton Heston. Mm. And one day, the director, William Wyler, called him in, and he said, Gore, what is it with Marsala? Why is this relationship with Ben-Hur so charged? What's going on here? Yeah. And Gore said, well, he's got a crush on him, Billy. And then Wyler, suddenly his face went red, and he said, don't tell Chuck! Don't tell Chuck! Right, right. And I think that suddenly there's a lot of telling of Chuck going on here, that this element that's always been part of, I suppose, male relationships is suddenly getting, people are blowing the whistle on it, and it's making a lot of people uncomfortable. Don't tell Chuck!
Well, uncomfortable or maybe not. I don't know. Among 20-something things, it may be jocular usage, but it looks like it's certainly out there as usage. Robert Heasley, what do you see going on? Is there a new kind of male bonding, male friendship, or just new lingo around it?
Well, I think what Jack's story was really a good one to start the conversation in terms of, in some ways, it's coming out of the closet. I think it always has been there, that there's always been sweet relationships between men, really close relationships that go unannounced or unarticulated, particularly in more recent times in the past century or so, that we've pulled away from being able to name it and yet experience these connections we have with other guys in our lives. We don't always know what to do with them because there isn't a conversation about it, and we don't even have the language to acknowledge it. And then we also sort of tend to back away from it and say, oh, my God, I think I like this guy too much. I think I'm going to turn around and go in a different direction. And so I think that there is sort of a dance that we do around it, and part of the dance is in the language we have. And I think there is sort of certainly an evolving new experience of saying, let's name what's going on, let's really play with the words. And so words like bromance is sort of a cute take on saying, I really like this guy, and it's funny and it's cute, and it's also reveals some underlying feelings that are there.
But here's the thing, Jeffrey Greif, I mean, male friendships aren't new, male bonding isn't new. So I'm just really interested in whether there's a different quality to these relationships or not. I mean, certainly
you know, lots of guys have friends and have for a long time. Have we been that frozen and bottled up, really? Or is that a caricature of American men and their relationships?
Well, I think there have been definite changes in the area of male friendships. In the 1880s, for example, the word homosexuality first came into use. So prior to that time, men were definitely writing letters to each other about their love for each other and saying, I can't wait to be back in your arms again, even though it was not meant in a homosexual way. Something happened in the 1880s and the 1890s and the early 20th century when men became afraid to express their feelings for each other, and we became somewhat hyper-masculine. It was a way of separating ourselves and protecting – this is white men – protecting our turf. And I think that's when expressing love for another man may have begun to show a little too much vulnerability, maybe made a man think that he was pursuing somebody. And if you're trying to be hyper-masculine, you don't want to be pursuing another guy because you're often competing against that guy for women and for work.
Well, here's a question then. Robert Heasley, is expressing love, like articulating love for another man in male friendship, is that necessary? I mean, can guys not just have, you know, a really close relationship, a strong bond without getting into all the articulation?
All the mushiness.
Is that a dinosaur view of the world? I mean, why not just have it? Just live it. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't. You know, what we aren't afraid of, we name. And we pursue it in a more conscious way. And I think that what happens, and I think it picks up on what Jeffrey was saying, that what happens after that end of the 18th century into the 1900s, we started moving towards a model of fearing each other and fearing the naming of what's going on. And so I was thinking about your comment, Jack, and saying, what if we had never named that we're in love with a woman, if we're heterosexual, that we're attracted to? I don't have to name that I love you. I have to just pretend, you know, I just have
just
to
be
like a good friend to you or have sex with you. But naming it really builds on an intentionality. It allows it to be analyzed. And I think that loss of the vocabulary of it, naming it, distances us from maybe being able to move in on those relationships with more intentionality, with less fear of what dimensions they take and experience them in a different way.
Yeah, maybe so. Jack, I mean, I think back – I loved the Patrick O'Brien's, series of Master and Commander, all these novels about men at sea. But thinking about history here you're a couple of centuries back, and you couldn't help but be struck in there by the very close relationships. And I loved the image, you know, they'd be dining and playing the fiddle and talking philosophy and science and with the kind of intimacy that seemed different to what we knew in the 20th century. And then, of course, they'd rush upstairs and get their cutlasses out and blow the hell out of some other ship. So it was sort of ideal, but maybe that did go away in the 20th century, some of that open reveling in male company. On the other hand, you got bowling leagues and everything else.
You do. Jack Aubrey and Stephen Matcher,
yes,
what a pair.
Yes.
My wife, who is a devotee of that series, says really the series is about a marriage. If you look at it that way, it is about a marriage. It's about these two very different personalities who love one another, clearly, and who have to make allowances.
The ship's captain and the intellectual.
That's right. And Stephen can't, you know, he's a landlubber. He keeps, every time he tries to walk onto a ship, he falls off. He's all at sea. And Jack, on the other hand, has trouble in the world of ideas, and they sort of combine. But their relationship, it is like a marriage. And you know, you can feel that even reading about Dr. Johnson. We had a Dr. Mm-hmm. Johnson biographer on. The warmth of his relationships, the ardor with which he embraced Boswell and his friends, that sort of thing, for a 20th century man at least, is a little jittery. I mean, it feels mm-hmm. it feels too intense, and so I think you're right. I think there was an ease about this kind of thing in the past that we've lost.
So, Jeffrey, do we see
one of the things? Yeah, I was going to say, I think one of the things that has changed now with that sort of lack of ease is that I talk about this a little in the book, is that men now have shoulder-to-shoulder friendships and women tend to have face-to-face friendships. Men tend to need to have something else to do with their friends. I may call up a guy and say, want to go play golf, want to go down to the bar and watch the March Madness, whereas my wife may be more apt to say, do you want to get together and talk over coffee? Unlikely to call up somebody and say, do you want to go, a guy and say, do you want to go to a French restaurant with me and open up a good bottle of wine and have it be in a dark, intimate kind of a place.
I can think of men who would do that. But, you know, we had just a couple of days ago on the show, Germaine Greer, iconic feminist. Yeah, she was saying, men have this great kind of relationship that women don't have. And really what she was describing was more like the shoulder to shoulder. Just go out, go to a ball game, hang, be at ease, not be judging one another. In a way, she was celebrating and wishing for women exactly that kind of relationship you're describing, Jeffrey, as inadequate maybe.
Well, no, I'm not saying that this is an inadequate one. I'm saying this is where we are now. I think that men's friendships are constructed differently than women's friendships, and men sometimes feel and they accept the maligning by women that, gee, you got together with your buddy and you didn't talk about feelings. You didn't find out that his marriage is falling apart or his kid is in therapy. That I think that men should be comfortable in the kinds of maybe non-expressive friendships that we have and not try and move into a situation where we're supposed to be more expressive. This is just how we're built or how we're conditioned.
Well, that's sort of I'm going to respond to that if I could for a second, Robert. And I'm not sure that that's sort of the ideal either in terms of, and it certainly isn't men's natural way of being. It's sort of we're all over the place as humans in terms of how we can be. But cultural conditions certainly accentuate or get us moving in a certain direction around our relationships. So that not to have that conversation and not to have that eye contact is a real loss in terms of those intimate or precious moments when we want to connect with another person, and that other person's a male who's important to us, and not be able to do that because we pull back, say, I'm not sure if this is, you know, if this is too much for the other guy, or this may be interpreted wrong. We also don't have the practice of it because most of us were raised with fathers who didn't either model it or really open up their own emotionality to us or their own sort of ability to be close and intimate in terms of sharing who they were. We're more likely to get that in our culture specifically from our moms.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about male friendship, male bonding, in the era of bromance and pop culture phenomena like the new film I Love You, Man. We've been joined by Jeffrey Greif. He's author of Buddy System, Understanding Male Friendships, and by Robert Heasley from the University, Indiana University of Pennsylvania. He's president of the American Men's Studies Association. Part of what has us talking about this is a spate of movies, the latest I Love You, Man, that kind of get into this. In this one, Paul Rudd plays a guy who's about to get married, and he has no male friend good enough for him to ask to be his best man. Here's a little bit where Peter, played by Paul Rudd, is eating dinner with his family and his fiancée Zoe, played by Rashida Jones. And his brother Robbie, played by Adam Stamberg, explains Peter's problem with man friends. Peter tries to defend himself.
Zoe, here's the deal. Peter's always been a girlfriend guy. He put all his focus and energy into his relationships, and all his dude friends just fell by the wayside.
Zoe, don't listen to him, all right? I mean, we're 8 years apart. Barely grew up together in the same house.
This is ridiculous. Why is it weird that I had girlfriends?
Nothing. We're just saying you never really had a best friend is all.
Well, who's your best friend?
Your brother, Robbie.
What's up?
He's about the coolest guy I know.
Okay, Paul Rudd and Adam Sandberg mix it up there. Why doesn't he have friends? So he gets started. Let's listen to just a little bit more from this is from I Love You, Man. And Peter, played by Paul Rudd, he's getting married, short on best man prospects. And here his brother again, played by Adam Sandberg, tries to help him to meet other men.
So what do? I mean, how do I meet friends? It's such a weird concept.
Well, I can do some recon around the gym. But you're going to have to be aggressive about this, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Use the internet to meet guys. Get mom to fix you up. I mean, if you see a cool-looking guy, strike up a conversation and ask him on a mandate.
A what?
A mandate.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
No.
By that, I mean casual lunch or after-work drinks, okay?
No dinner and no movies. You're not taking these boys to see The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
No, I won't.
Oh, I love that movie. I don't know. Jeffrey, what do you hear in the movie, the new one? I love you, man.
Yeah, I think you've captured some of the really good lines. I think it's a really interesting movie, and I got together four couples to come to my house after they watched the movie with me, and we had a fairly lengthy discussion about the movie and the pros and cons of both women's friendships and men's friendships. And I think you see some of the issues around the fear of appearing gay if you appear to be too close and too loving with another guy. And I think in the research that I've done, that continues to be an underlying theme for men. If they pursue another man too strongly or too vigorously to be a friend, and I've talked to a number of men about this, they're afraid that they're going to be seen as stalkers and are going to back off a little bit. So I may call up a guy once to go with me to the bar or play golf, but if he turns me down, I don't think I'm going to call him again. Yet I'm socialized to chase after women and be turned down by them. I'm not socialized to chase after men and be turned down by men.
Jack, I just don't remember, though, in my life, like needing to call, you know, calling for the equivalent of a date. I mean, most of my friendships, I don't know if this is typical or I don't know, but they just grew out of life.
Well, that was, I think, their great comfort, that there was no self-consciousness about it. There was, you know, someone once said, I think it was Dr. Johnson, there's nothing so vain as a scheme of merriment. There were no schemes of merriment. Things just happened. And people liked it just that way. And the making of it conscious and deliberate, I think that's where inhibition enters in. You know, this question of bonding, strangely, the military, the most masculine of organization, couldn't exist without bromance. I mean, that's the cement, the human chemistry that holds the keep small unit cohesion and in the face of the enemy. And studies have shown that, in fact, it's the man that can't bond. It's the isolato who's vulnerable to cowardice, who's apt to run away. It's the men who can feel that bond. But at the same time, in an age when homosexuality is open, you just turn that military connection just a little bit, an extra click, and suddenly it can seem gay, and that you can understand why the military is neuralgic on that subject.
Yeah, sure, absolutely allergic. But Robert Heasley, I wonder if there isn't there a difference between romance and bonding? I mean, romance historically was for male female, or in gay relationships you can well understand it, mm-hmm. but isn't there a difference? I mean, romance is a kind of flowers and kisses, not exactly dying in battle. They may be related, but are they the same?
Well, they are different, and I don't know that we have sort of thought about those differences. But they have some of the same characteristics, right? They sort of, I like being with this person. I want to share something about me with this person. And I agree with both Jack and Jeffrey. We get confused then about, well, what does this mean? How do I translate this into something that's not homosexual or something that's not going to become sexual in some ways or be interpreted that way? And bonding is building that close connection, but it's also, I think, in the bromance kind of model of it or ideal of it, is being able to have those some of the elements that we have in our most intimate relationship with our primary partner if we're, you know, in a relationship as straight or gay men, you know, that we feel like, oh, this is a person who really knows me. And then if I check in on that person or really intentionally ask to be known or ask about another man's life, so what's going on with you? You look like you're depressed or you look like you're struggling or tell me about your life. Then it sort of gets too personal because we, again, don't have the familiarity with hearing that in men's conversations. And that's maybe, I think, could help us a lot if we heard it more. And I think that's part of what this film is saying is, well, maybe we can really visit this material about men and how silly we look when we try to avoid being close or even seeking out those kinds of relationships.
Yeah. It's interesting to look at the movie and think that is bromance the right lens to use, because really the way that men and women, but we're talking about men, construct friendships is we have our very close friends, our best friends, then we have sort of a wider circle of friends who we like to hang out with, and maybe we hope they become closer friends, and then we have friends who we sort of know from work and are essentially just acquaintances, not to mention our lifelong old friends. But I think people tend to classify their friends into groups of, this is the guy I'm going to call if I've got an emergency and I have to get my car towed or my wife has kicked me out of the house or something like that. Those are going to be your closest best friends. And the bromance sort of, to me, is a notion of somebody new who you've met who's kind of exciting to you because you like to play guitar together. And maybe you're hoping that person will become a best friend and you're in a courting stage.
I may be old-fashioned, but I'm just still not sure how it speeds the plow, helps that relationship along to bring the notion of romance. It always just felt different to me, you know? But, hey, I don't know. Let's hear from our listeners. Columbia, South Carolina. Josh, you're on the air.
How you doing, Tom? Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick comment.
Yes, sir.
I have lots of very close male friends, and I'm not sure exactly what it stems from, but when I first met my now wife, me and a friend of mine went out late at night. When I was younger, we did some pretty wild things. We went and actually climbed a water tower near my house. We just went on a walk and were just talking about things and climbed a water tower. And I came back home, and my wife asked me what I did, and I told her, you know, that we went out for a walk and climbed a water tower. And she believed that I was secretly gay, and I made the whole story up and believed that for a week before I could actually get him and his wife to come down and have a conversation with her.
Just because you went out, had a walk at night, and went up the water tower, and I don't know, looked at the moon—that sounds like a guy thing.
I mean, you know, it was pretty silly to do, but you know, we've done sillier things before, and I'm not sure. Maybe it's because, you know, I was raised by a single mother, and so was he. Maybe that makes us a little more sensitive to each other's feelings, or more feminine, or maybe it's just the fact that she doesn't have very many close friends. When we did get married, I had to turn people away to be on my side, and I actually had to get some of my friends' wives to be on her side. So I'm not sure what it's saying.
Josh, it's a great story, and let us cogitate on it. Thanks for sharing that. Let me get one more right here from Megan in Whitman, Massachusetts. Megan, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well. What do you know?
I just said when I called in, I had never heard the expression bromance before until my husband was involved in one. And
what does that mean?
Well, he started a new job and met someone there that was also just starting, so they just were in a similar circumstance together. And just kind of fed off that, I think. So
and he picked up a new friend who was a guy and enjoyed it, and do you call that a bromance? I'm trying to get a fix on this vocabulary.
Actually, my husband said that they were sort of getting teased about it, and everyone was calling it a bromance. And
okay.
I like the term, but I've never heard it before.
Yeah. So what do you think?
I think it's great. It seems to have sort of like an invigoration factor to it. Mm-hmm. There's more interest. They both have picked up interests from each other, so they've kind of expanded their horizons, I guess. So I think, and just since I got on the line and was listening to the show, saying that it was, you know, the old-fashioned way, how you meet people the old-fashioned way and stuff, I think just times have changed and meeting people isn't quite the same as it used
right.
to be.
So. Are you jealous of your husband's bromance, Megan, or it sounds like you're for it?
No, I think I'm for it. Anything that improves his life improves my life. So if he has a new friend and opens things up for him, and it kind of opens things up for us, too, I guess.
That's great. Megan, thank you very much. Jeffrey Greif, there's two stories with a little different spin on each one. You know, some pushback in the Carolinas, and Megan saying, why not? What do you hear in these, Jeffrey?
I think I hear pretty much two ends of the same spectrum, that here's the first story is, I think, speaking to the issue that men and women still feel a little uncomfortable, perhaps. Some of us do, if there's too much closeness, too much aloneness, too much intimacy that goes on. And I'm really glad that society is moving to a point where being gay and lesbian is much more acceptable than it ever has been in the past. And I think that's going to help us to, as men, straight men, to feel more comfortable expressing our feelings. But there still are holdovers from the way we were raised about whatever you do on the playground, you don't want to come across as being a gay guy. And I think that is certainly the case in the first story. The second story is a great story also of a woman who feels very comfortable with her husband having a close relationship. And I think that's great that she's so supportive.
Robert Heasley, do you think that the greater general acceptance in society, looking at the polls of homosexuality, does make it easier for men to have friendships, or does it make it more necessary for them to assert that they're not because it's more out? You can, you know, be what you want. I mean, I wonder if sometimes women are tweaking men when they call it a bromance, you know, sort of raising the question in a jesting way, Robert.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's actually two thoughts. One is, you know, what I agree with what Jeffrey was saying in terms of the greater acceptance of sort of this demand, not paying so much adherence to fearing homosexuality and more openness about that. But there's also a piece for me in this, in both of these scenarios, about women and feminism. And certainly, as women have broken out of this box of the traditional woman and been allowed to move around with a larger menu of options of how to be women, it certainly has invited a whole reconceptualization of gender anyway. And we also, you know, have been challenged by the feminist movement and by women who have been really actively engaged in changing their lives, that this whole idea of men and women as opposites just doesn't hold water any longer, to the degree that certainly it used to. And so when both of those scenarios, when in presenting them, you know, it's like, oh, this guy's going out for a walk, climbing a tower, in terms of Josh's case, it is sort of an indication that men can have these really lovely evenings together and do something that's just not at a bar and not at a strip club, and that's just going for a walk. And so there is sort of a change, but I think it's as women change and as we reconceptualize homosexuality and question all of that, the construction of heterosexuality itself and what it means. To be heterosexual doesn't mean being cut off from emotional connections with same-sex people. Heterosexuality doesn't mean just being attracted and obsessed by females for men. It means having a wide range of emotions, that what we get erotically attracted to is maybe females, but how we are engaged with emotionally or spiritually can take a range of spectrums in terms of what gender the other person is.
That sounds like more freedom. Let's get a call from Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and Tim. Hi, Tim, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. It's a marvelous show. I agree with what everybody is saying. I just have a quick comment to make. I think bromance, you know, in the last 6 months has really been a term that's come around for marketing, for reality TV and movies and stuff like that. I think it's really just explains the friendship between men. I don't know if anybody's seen the reality TV show, I believe on Bravo, it's called Bromance with Brody. He's friends with the Kim Kardashians and all those type of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that they've really just made that sort of a marketing tool so they can sell movies and TV.
Mm-hmm. Hey, the culture industry is always going to be watching for an opportunity, and maybe you're right. I've got a little clip from the reality TV cable show Bromance, premiered in December of 08. Let's just listen in here to just get a flavor of that in the show. A wealthy male socialite searching for a best friend, eliminating contestants one by one.
What's a bromance?
Bromance have been around forever, but now I feel like I see them everywhere. The phenomenon, kind of like the girls and the little baby chihuahuas. A bromance is a bond between you and your go-to guy. No games.
Hey, it's okay, dude.
No BS. Somebody that just keeps it real with you.
Okay, Jack Beatty, everything gets pulled into the culture industry there. I mean, a reality show called Bromance. But behind all that, there's always a reason. There's something that leading them to think that, you know, there may be new interest.
Well, I think we just heard about it from Josh and Megan. Mm-hmm. I mean, that there's this new palette of possibilities that people are enjoying. It is, however, generationally specific. I have to confess, the thought of taking an evening walk with a man friend and you know, enjoying that would be difficult for me. I mean, I have good friends, and I'd certainly like to see them and so on, but there's a, you know, I was, to me, the model when I was a young man was John F. Kennedy, and I can't think of anybody cooler and more circumspect sort of physically than he was.
But there, he couldn't just bolt out the door at midnight with a friend?
No, I don't think so. Whereas I could see President Obama doing that in a heartbeat. I mean, he's so at ease with himself. He hugs everybody. He just feels so great. And I think that's wonderful. But there are these, you know, path dependencies, and you're in your generation for good or ill.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about male friendship, male bonding in the era of bromance. The word sort of the Our I Love You Man, the new film, is out. Jeffrey Greif is with us, author of Buddy System, Understanding Male Friendships. Robert Heasley is here. Jack Beatty is here. Here's a funny little bit from the 2007 film Superbad. Two teenage friends, Seth and Evan, played by Jonah Hill and Michael Cera, talk about what they really mean to each other.
I love you. I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I love you.
I'm not embarrassed.
Love you.
I love you. It's like, why don't we say that every day? Why can't we say it more often?
I just love you. I just want to go to the rooftops and scream, I love my best friend, Evan.
We should go up on my roof.
For sure.
Yeah, maybe we better go up on the roof. They're from Superbad 2007. Let's get a call from Philadelphia. And Chris, hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jack.
Hi.
I grew up with three really close guy friends. I actually lived with one during college, and I live with two of them now. And so it's never been an unusual thing, and I've actually come across people who have either thought it was fantastic that we're still friends and we're so close, or they think it's weird. And I was in England once traveling with two of them when we were at a grocery store stocking up for the week ahead of us. And the woman at the checkout line was almost speechless because she had never seen three guys shopping together at a grocery store. And she made it a point to tell us that while cracking up.
Okay, so you got your groceries.
Yeah, she just thought it was such an odd concept that three guys were going grocery shopping together.
Yeah, that's funny. It is so cultural. I mean, I lived for a while in India. Men there hold hands. They hold hands walking in the street all the time. It's just ordinary, at least in the part of South India where I was living. Jeffrey Greif, you know, here we come to the issue of young men getting married later and, you know, being roommates longer. I mean, there's just a kind of a structural element here, too, it looks to me. Don't you think, Jeffrey?
Yeah, and of course, with young men growing up a little bit later than they used to, they're going to hang out together longer, and so there's going to be a greater chance. I mean, the great thing about that is that men are going to get a chance to really live together longer and form stronger friendships. And it's interesting, the story about the sales lady in England, mm-hmm. and the caller, and the issue of so many men, when we interviewed them, said they really don't have many friends. And here's a caller who really is happy and has a lot of great friends and such a great role model for other men.
Do you think that this younger generation of men just have more friends because of that time where they're not in a marriage relationship? Is that going to emerge as just a fact of American life as that demographic moves forward, Jeffrey?
Well, pretty much what happens is that there's a bimodal curve. Men have a lot of friends when they are young, and they're especially important in their adolescence and 20s. And then they get into a marriage and a job and have children, and the time with friends dips down. They don't have the time. And then when they reach their 50s, their kids don't want any part of them anymore, and their jobs are more secure, and hopefully their marital relationships are more secure, they begin seeking out friends again. So the phenomenon increases again in the 50s and 60s. But with the 20s being elongated now, I think you're having a longer gestation period on that first part of the bimodal curve.
Let's go to Needham, Massachusetts, and Tim. Tim, I think you were listening to Jack's maybe interrupted anecdote on JFK as I was there. What are you thinking, Tim?
Well, I was thinking about Ted Sorensen's book, Counselor, and how he described his relationship with Kennedy as sort of so close that it was one soul living in two bodies, and just wondered what Jack's thoughts were on that.
Ted Sorensen, famously JFK's speechwriter. How about that one, Jack?
Well, now that's a really good example. I guess I was thinking of the physical JFK. I mean, he was so distant and wry and witty, and there was a sort of everything seemed controlled and under control, and that there was such an emphasis on style, on the way he spoke, because that was the Sorensenian way. So I'm glad to hear he had a very close relationship with his ghostwriter, but I don't know that it was a backslapping one. Famously, he hated to do that as a politician. He hated to go to these groups and, you know, shake hands with people and carry on. That wasn't his mode. There was the Hemingway hero aspect to him, that cool, detached, wry presence. And I can, but I'm glad to hear that he and Ted were so close.
But maybe not getting sweaty and drumming in the woods.
Maybe not anything like that.
If I could respond to that, you know, one of the things that you're describing, Jack, is the bravado kind of public image of men together slapping backs or drinking beers and watching games together, which is a different type of setting. And then in those more intimate moments, I have a project of interviewing and doing a photography piece for men who are talking about their most intimate male friendships. And one of the themes that comes out of that is that we're closer to together. We spend, when we are together, we're more likely to look in each other's eyes, talk, have longer dinners. But we don't do that as much in public as we do it in private. Or we go to walks together and we have time alone together. And that's when those relationships evolve. That's when that connection gets made at a different level than the sharing scores from the latest game or sharing a beer. And so there, and I think we need all of that in our lives. Certainly there's room for, we have big worlds that we live in, and there's rooms for lots of ways of being. And so I could imagine Kennedy, like Obama, as very public figures, or Bush as very public figures, having those more intimate moments with other males that they really rely on for connection, for helping figure me out, and not putting all the burden on figuring us out on the women in our lives, for instance, for those of us in straight relationships.
Of course, you don't necessarily need a mandate, whatever that is exactly, to do that. I was at Home Depot yesterday, and I was thinking, I saw so many clusters of men talking there. Maybe it's because of the rough economy right now. Maybe that's why they had time during the day. But these were guys, they were, and you know, I was overhearing, they were talking about real things, about jobs and about concerns. I mean, you know, in the course of life.
Yeah, and working together, men will often do that on the job. They'll share their feelings, and I think that, you know, in agreement with what Jeffrey was saying earlier, we often, Jeffrey describes it as shoulder-to-shoulder relationships, and I would like to see us move to making more eye contact. Certainly, I think that that's one of those movements that is going on, but we oftentimes engage in those kinds of interactions of sharing our emotional stuff when we're doing something together, when we're in crises together, certainly, like being unemployed or trying to deal with bills that are coming up and standing in the middle of Home Depot.
Yeah, that's not exactly a dark French restaurant, but it was working.
I love Home Depot as a location for male bonding.
Yeah, might be soon.
Some of them. Let's go to Augusta, Georgia, and Gail. Hi, Gail. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jack. This is such a great program. I wanted to share with you that I am deeply in love with a man. And one of the things that I love most about him is his relationships with other men. These are men of quality, men who are exploring and developing their own spirituality. And he will spend a whole afternoon with one of them talking about spirituality, relationships, world peace, just everything. And he's so comfortable talking about his emotional needs, where they're being met, where they're not being met, what he wants out of life, what he wants out of relationships. And he's this way whether he's talking to men or women.
And as a woman, that draws you to him.
Absolutely. Because it makes me trust him that this is a man who knows who he is, because he thinks about it, he spends time on that, and he's honest about it with himself and with others.
Sounds like you should marry this guy if you haven't already, Gail.
I wish I could.
Well, maybe you will. Good luck. Thank you, Gail. Let's go to Ross in Winchester, Massachusetts. Ross, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
So I'm in that late 40s category, kids starting to head off to college, and I was having coffee with a friend of mine in town, and we wondered about getting a men's group together, kind of reaching into our social networks, looking for emotionally evolved guys, and just getting together and taking the risk of meeting for once a month, 2.5 hours, in a circle, no beer, no bowling, no drums, just talk. And we've been doing it for about a year, and you know, we don't. For us in this community, we don't have a lot of time. Time's sort of the enemy, and there's not enough time in our lives to develop male friendships. So we get together and share each other's lives, laugh, cry, go to the depths, and it's just been absolutely terrific.
And is that your slogan? No beer, no bowling, no drums, just talk?
No, we've never known what to call ourselves. There's a lot of awkwardness at first about what are we doing here, but men were drawn to it, and they hung in there, and we've never known what to call ourselves. I think the wives have been cheering us on, too. It was a fairly homogeneous group, and even though we randomly collected ourselves, there's support from home, and we just love getting together once a month and sharing our lives.
And why not? Does it feel weird at all to you? You know, are you guys do you have all kinds of guys? Are there manly men and, I don't know, emotionally evolved men?
It turns out we're all married. We've all got kids. Yeah. So there's a whole life stage stuff that we're sharing. There was a little awkwardness at first, but now it's just friendships developing, and I can see this sort of thing going on for years with this group of guys.
Good luck. It sounds very gratifying. Robert Heasley, what do you say? Is this
well, there's a link for me in Gail's story as well as mm-hmm. as well as Ross's in terms of, you know, what a relief to women to have men figure themselves out. And not have women do all the work on that. And that movement, that conscious movement that Ross is describing in terms of, you know, seeking out those opportunities to just get to know other men so that we're not isolated in our own bodies and our own spirit and our own sort of emotions and saying, oh, I don't know about other guys, but this is bothering me. But I'm not going to open up to find out that we're more alike and we've got lots of commonalities in terms of our life challenges and our life joys. And being able to open those things up to each other means we break down that isolation. And if we know anything in terms of the work on emotional intelligence and what men bring into therapy, it's feelings of isolation, feeling of disappointment in themselves, feelings of shame or guilt. And that's certainly an opportunity to say, oh, I'm not alone on this.
Let's get a call from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Lewis, you're on the air.
Hi there. How you doing, guys?
We're pretty well.
What's that?
We're good. How about you?
Oh, good. I'm on the road. I'm headed to Lancaster, and I picked up your radio program, and then it kind of zapped off, but I'm glad you guys are still on topic. I'll let you know, I've been, I guess you can call it kind of a bromance with a good buddy of mine. His name is Rob, and we get together every morning to spend time praying together and just kind of talk about what's going on in our lives and kind of how God is working. Now, I attend church. I call myself a Christ follower.
Okay.
I think that there's so much to be learned about this topic that you guys are talking about, where sometimes, you know, guy groups are sometimes the most difficult thing to try to develop in a church environment. And, you know, spiritually, Rob and I are just really connected. We've been doing this for a year and a half. We talk on the phone every day at 6:30, and every day except for Sunday. And I'll tell you, it's been a truly enriching experience for myself. I think I'm a better husband to my wife. And I've been able to, I don't know, to have that other guy to connect with has really, I think, made me a better person as well.
And does your wife, you know, cock her eyebrow at this, or does she applaud it? And
she actually applauds it. She really thinks it's helped me to become a better husband and a better dad, because, you see, with this creates a level of accountability. Whenever you begin to open up your heart, you know, you want to know somebody else's input on a situation, what have you. Or sometimes they'll just say, you know, so how's your relationship with your wife going? How are you guys communicating? How are things going? And he's able to ask some of the harder questions, you know. So are you keeping yourself sexually pure? Are you, you know, how's your time in the Word? To have that encouragement and knowing that there's a guy there that, you know, if I'm struggling in an area, I can share with him. And that's okay. He's not going to, like, you know, stop being my friend. He's always going to be there.
Absolutely, Lewis. We hear it, and we hear the sustenance that you're clearly taking from it. Thank you for calling, Lewis. Jeffrey Greif, you know, that language is also kind of the language of the therapy era in a way, or maybe I'm stereotyping it.
Well, no, I think a number of good callers have made some good points. There's a chapter in my book about my presenting the findings of the book to a church group. It's a group I found outside of Baltimore of men mm-hmm. who meet on Saturday mornings, and it's essentially shoulder to shoulder with a minister but also with God. And they've been getting together for years, and there's a lot of men who do meet through the church and find a great deal of support and love for each other and for God through having the church umbrella. And it also is interesting to think back about the fact that people with friendships, men and women, one of the things that has been shown, people with friendships live longer, healthier and happier lives. So I think the fact that these men are getting together in groups is a way of – we've talked more about the individual friendship. I think we've moved into the group friendship. And Ross's experience with a men's group, there's a group outside of Philadelphia of black and white men that have been meeting for years, and they have a rule. Their rule is that you can't talk about sports. So it forces men to find other ways to relate. And for all the men's groups out there, I think that's a really great thing to consider. What happens when you change the way that we're used to interacting and force us to find new ways? And as Robert was saying, you know, try and face each other a little bit more, have more eye contact.
Jack, I guess I come away feeling like there are just many ways here. I mean, okay, you could rule out sports, but then sports, you know, are also a way into thinking about all kinds of dynamics in life. Do you feel liberation going on here, Jack?
I'm moved. I mean, as Gail was talking and describing this man, I was just struck that this is a sort of a new moral ideal. She was appreciating qualities in this man that almost go unvoiced, and I felt she was like a Columbus of the emotions there. And I salute her and Ross and Lewis and all seekers after friendship. After all, Yeats said, "Think where man's glory most begins and ends, and say my glory was I had such friends."
Ah, Jack, you rock. It's great. It's great to have all of you with us. Jack, thank you for joining us this hour.
Thank you.
Robert Heasley, wonderful to have you there. Good luck with the conference in Montreal. President of the American Men's Studies Association. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks so much.
And Jeffrey Greif, author of Buddy System. Great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Jack.
And thanks to all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.